This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today talking with Mark Thomas, Global Head of Threat Intelligence at NCT Limited.
My name is Mark Thomas. I head up the Threat Intelligence in the Security Division of NCT Limited, leading the Global Threat Intelligence Center, the team responsible for global threat research, threat intelligence platforms and services development, as well as intelligence, communications and alliances.
NCT has just issued its Global Threat Intelligence Report for 2020. It's quite a tome. Even the executive summary is 22 pages. The main report is 73. Do you want to give us a quick look at what the big highlights were for you?
Every year we produce a Global Threat Intelligence Report, and every year we try to do something a little bit different. This year we've incorporated the managed security services data from our global security operations centers. We've incorporated our cybersecurity advisory data, which is essentially a business outcome driven consulting engagement. And we've also included insights from White Hat Security, who specialize in application security insights. We've analyzed 18 different industries across different regions, and we have different focus areas. Specifically, we analyze finance, technology, healthcare, manufacturing, and retail. We also discuss other industries as well. One of the key standouts for us was that threat actors are innovating. We're seeing attack volumes increasing across every industry between 2018 and 2019. The big call out was around the Internet of Things weaponization. We've seen the reemergence of the likes of Mirai and derivatives, which are targeting businesses right across the globe. Of course, we always tend to see old vulnerabilities persistently remain an active target. A lot of organizations are challenged to patch new vulnerabilities, but they also forget the old ones as well. What we've also seen is a shift in sector targeting. The technology sector now tops the list of most attack sectors.
In the report, you publish a 3.5 month timeline of COVID-19 and how you saw attackers changing their attacks, what campaigns they put in place, what actions did they take. That's a very fast level of adaptation on a global scale. How are you seeing clients adapt to that, or are clients not able to deal with such shifting sands?
We've seen how quickly attackers can adapt to the situation. They're using COVID-19 lures to target different industries, specifically healthcare, manufacturing, retail, and the financial services sector. They can quickly make that pivot to different sector targeting as well as different region targeting. They've adopted the likes of spam, phishing, domain impersonation, ransomware, Trojan mobile phone applications. We've even seen DNS redirection and the new term that I think everyone is aware of around Zoom bombing, being able to hijack telephone and video conferencing software. One of the real key trends that we've discussed in this year's report, organizations are challenged. They not only have to worry about the current COVID-19 situation, but they have to continue to conduct business given this decentralized way of working. People are starting to adopt new applications like Zoom and other VPN remote access software, but they forget that they need to patch those applications as well. This is where we see adversaries taking advantage of that situation. We continue to see the rise in banking Trojans like Emotet. And it's not just the average cyber criminal who's targeting individuals here. We're actually talking about nation state actors who are engaging in these types of attacks. One of the statistics that we called out was over 2,000 new domain registrations per day using COVID-19 themes. We've also seen the rise of old botnets like TripBot, as an example, who've started to use malware COVID-19 lures as well. They can be very quick to adapt, but as you mentioned in your question, businesses haven't necessarily been as agile in staging secure infrastructure to protect the end user.
The systems that are getting attacked, the lack of VPNs, the use of online services, video conferencing, these are not new systems to many organizations. We've had bring your own device for many years, yet organizations seemed unprepared when people went work from home in how to expand their bring your own device security to those users. Why were we so unprepared for this sudden shift in technology usage in the organization?
Many organizations hadn't yet gone through digital transformation. It's a term that's thrown around all the time. preparing for the mobile user who have their own device, who are working from different locations, be it the local Wi-Fi or a cafe next door, they need to be able to take the business with them wherever they need to go. It's taken this COVID-19 situation for businesses to wake up and to understand that they really need to transform more rapidly. As a result, there's more assets that are exposed. People's way of working has to change. The infrastructure that we use to connect to the business has to be updated. New applications have to be rolled out across the business and onto people's home networks as well as their mobile devices. This has created a huge challenge for organizations as they have to deal with application sprawl, new types of devices that they need to support, and they have to secure this as well. Not only from the device, but the application, securing the communication, right up to the data center or the cloud environment where the data is stored. All of this is a pressing issue, but as I mentioned before, the business has to continue running. When you have this advent of new threats, that just creates a huge challenge that most organizations find difficult to overcome.
One of the industries that received a huge amount of attention from attackers has been technology. Yet we tend to think that technology is the industry that's going to save organizations. What's driving those attacks? Is it the sudden rush by organizations to go to the cloud? Is it a lack of preparation?
All of the above experienced a 70% increase in overall attack volume from year to year. In recent years, we've also discussed supply chain attacks. Rather than target a specific organization directly, how about you target the technology sector who's building those applications that you procure and use within your organization? Some of the attacks that we're seeing there are specifically around ransomware, application-specific attacks at 31%, a lot of denial of service attacks as well that's driven by the weaponization of IoT. One of the interesting insights that we saw by working with White Hat Security, a company from NTT, is that technology sector actually has the most diverse application footprint. They also have the highest number of serious vulnerabilities per site. That actually makes sense if you think of it. Technology companies drive innovation, and innovation drives change, and change creates risks. It's no wonder that adversaries are starting to target technology sector even more prominently over the past few years, because it provides an avenue in which case they can target other industries and organizations as well.
Change creates risk sounds like a good thing for the CISO to take into the boardroom. If we're planning our change in such a way as to minimize risk and therefore accept that it's going to happen, we need to be more aware. If technology, as the industry at the core of this, is struggling, what does that mean for the average enterprise?
It's about a balance of deploying technology, but also understanding what the GRC landscape looks like as well. Understanding what the data that needs to be protected looks like, who's accessing it, where is it stored. All of these things need to be carefully considered. One of the things that we talk about in the report is the evolution of the privacy and legislation landscape. We've seen a number of countries across the globe update legislation, whether that's the US or Australia, right across the Americas and Europe. There's so many different factors that the CISO needs to consider. What we've talked about specifically in the report is the need to be secure by design. That's all about having the business level awareness that security must follow the business. It needs to be prioritized on the boardroom agenda. It has to have the business level buy-in and executive support. You also need to consider continuity as part of that. Cyber resilience is something that COVID-19 has really brought to the fore. It's no good just having your people, processes, and technology if it doesn't work together to protect the business, particularly in such crisis situations as we find ourselves in today.
Reconnaissance is one of those attacks that is often dismissed as noise. But if people are doing reconnaissance on you, they're doing it for a reason. The report shows an awful lot of reconnaissance in Europe, the Middle East, the US. But in Asia Pac, that reconnaissance level is low because there's a lot of attacks going on. Is there a specific cycle you're seeing, and where on that cycle should companies be moving quicker to put defenses in place?
In terms of adversary tradecraft and the tactics and techniques that they employ, it's always different whether we look at it from a regional perspective or from an industry perspective. One of the highlights for this year is seeing that within Europe specifically, there is a lot more reconnaissance activity taking place. And that's pre-exploitation. Before an adversary is going to break into the network, they want to understand what the visibility or what your assets look like. Do you have updated software? What types of applications you're using before they plan their attacks? What we've seen is an increase in reconnaissance year over year, particularly in Europe. But this is really against the backdrop of a rise in IoT weaponization, as well as the adoption of new malware payloads, which have reconnaissance capabilities built in. Instead of malware just infecting the host, it's actually looking to conduct reconnaissance against that host and then spread right across the network to move laterally or to propagate against different organizations. We've not only seen different types of vulnerabilities that have been weaponized, which allow these malwares to spread faster, but we're also seeing those exploits being more effective as well. That's why we're essentially seeing that rise. We're also seeing a large use of web application and application-specific attacks, particularly against the likes of Drupal, WordPress, and Joomla, which are content management systems. Once these systems are exploited, adversaries use them as a bounce point, as a way to target different organizations. That has led to a rise in lateral spread through initially that reconnaissance stage of attack.
When you examine the reconnaissance attacks, how many of them are probing core systems and how many of them are trying to understand the IoT landscape inside clients? After all, IoT is one of those areas where you've seen a significant increase in attacks.
Reconnaissance is one of those things that you don't know what you don't know. That's why you conduct reconnaissance, to figure out what is in there to begin with. Now, it depends on what the actions on objectives are for the particular adversary. Maybe a cyber criminal is purely interested in the database software, whereas a nation-state actor might be interested in the crown jewels. It really depends on the type of adversary that we're dealing with. What we have seen is that there has been a rise of IoT weaponization, where we've seen the likes of botnets such as Mirai, IoTroop, and EchoBot, which have advanced their propagation capabilities through leveraging automation. Once an IoT device is infected, it can automatically spread itself to other IoT devices. In order to do that, it needs to conduct reconnaissance, because it itself may not know which other devices are IoT. That's why we see this large swath of reconnaissance right across the network and into different regions.
When you were talking about application-specific attacks, you called out CMSs. We've also seen a big growth in card skimming attacks targeted at CMSs. How do we get the information and the knowledge to those companies who are starting to use a CMS? Many of these are small businesses, small retailers, who've maybe never had a retail web presence. They also lack support in terms of cybersecurity from their providers. Where do we change how we help them, and how do we tighten up the security around those CMSs?
Cybercriminals are using content management systems as a route business to steal valuable data and launch follow-up attacks. You only have to look at retail as an example. As you mentioned, small to medium businesses, they don't necessarily have the same security budget that a global financial organization would. What we did see was that 20% of attacks were related to some form of content management system. Many companies are completely dependent on having that web application for their web presence. It's a little worrying that threat actors are targeting web applications and specific content management systems so much and so rapidly. To the point around, what do we do about it? This is where the Global Threat Intelligence Report comes to the fore. It's all about making people aware of the threat. To do that, we're putting out the report. It's free. It's available to download. It's about having that situational awareness to begin with. From that, we'll follow a conversation around what is it that we can do to help protect you as a client. That may mean understanding what the threat landscape looks like, understanding what the risk profile looks for that particular client, and then helping them with the steps to get there. We have something called the Cybersecurity Advisory, which is a consulting engagement where we map out a client's current state to understand where they need to be. Now, where they need to be might not be the most sophisticated level, but it needs to be good enough to help them deliver on the products and services that they so heavily rely on. There are different ways that we can do that. Part of that is the conversation that we have around consulting. A lot of these clients will then say, I don't necessarily have the skills or the expertise to manage the equipment. What is it that you can do for us? We have a range of managed security services which can help offload that burden. They can focus on their core competencies.
One of the reasons that we've seen the growth of platforms in the cloud is it's easier for a platform owner to secure the platform. But most people's websites today are still not run on a hosted platform in the same way as a lot of cloud apps are. Do you see a shift coming in that? Or is that a sector of the industry that is yet to really understand the benefits of cloud platforms?
It depends who's procuring the application, who's procuring that software. Is it someone within the marketing department or is it someone within IT? Overall, the IT department needs to have visibility, but we still should allow other departments, other functions to remain innovative. We just need to get that governance aspect right. There has been a shift over to cloud-based environments where the cloud provider can provide some level of security. Ultimately, that still sits with the client or the customer to adequately secure the application or at least secure the data that is uploaded into the application. The awareness hasn't gone across to everybody yet. It's still a challenge, as we've seen here. We see such a large volume of activity targeted towards content management systems is because there are such a large number of vulnerabilities associated with them. And with a large number of vulnerabilities, that means attackers need to target that in order to exploit the data. We see a shift. It's only through providing those insights, like we pointed out in the report, that people start to understand that something has to be done to secure the data and to secure the application in the cloud.
IT teams and IT security teams are sick and tired of being told to patch systems. One of the standout set of numbers from this report was the number of old vulnerabilities that were very high up the attack surface. Vulnerabilities for which we've had patches for 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years in some cases, are still being exploited because organizations haven't patched. What do we need to do to change people's awareness?
You've tapped into the point around top five vulnerabilities with the most exploit attempts for about 78% of all attacks that we saw. We look at the likes of Heartbleed, which is something that came out about 4 or 5 years ago, but still remains one of those persistent threats that we see right across the globe. What do we do to change that? Firstly, the challenge that organizations face is this race to patch everything. A new vulnerability comes out and clients are simply worried about what they have to patch today or this week or this month. They tend to forget about things that are far older, 4 years ago, 10 years ago. Given the normal life cycle of a business, they don't have weeks to patch systems. They might only have a finite amount of time. It could be an hour, it could be a couple of hours. And they can't tangibly roll out all patches within that space of time. This is the importance of what that patch window needs to be. Maybe it needs to be for longer. Maybe it needs to tap into cloud-based infrastructure where some of that is actually taken care of you. It's one of those pressing challenges that we always see. It's patching chaos, the race to patch everything is always going to be a challenge. What we need to focus on is having a patch management process and make sure that it's documented, as well as a vulnerability management process as well. It is about getting the basics right. Instead of focusing on the next emerging technology that might be out there, securing the foundation or having the appropriate cyber hygiene in place is something that needs to be prioritized first and foremost, because that will help to reduce the exposure to different vulnerabilities.
People are in the main not running software that is 8, 9, 10 years old. There's been multiple versions since then. They've upgraded that software, yet those vulnerabilities still exist in that software they've purchased. Should we begin to expect vendors to do better?
Yeah, and that's a huge problem for OEM providers, particularly in the IoT space, where rolling out a new firmware update is more costly than it is to patch. You have a look at the likes of Apache. What we've seen is that there's 258 new vulnerabilities reported in the past 2 years. Normally, the Open Source Software Foundation, they're pretty good at rolling out new application patches, but we can't say the same around IoT providers. People who make that software, it takes a long time to get through a patch, redeploy the software, and making sure that everyone who is a consumer of an IoT device is actually patching as well. There is a push towards placing that responsibility back on the IoT manufacturer. Over the coming years, that responsibility will be pushed to them and it stay with them. But until that time, it's incumbent upon the consumer to make sure that they have a patch available and they're adequately securing it. Changing default passwords is something that is always recommended, but people tend to forget. There is a level of responsibility that falls on both right now.
It's often hard to enumerate the amount of IoT you have in your organization. People don't really know what's attached to their network in many cases. They spot a PC, they spot a tablet, they spot the occasional mobile phone, but IoT devices fly under the radar. How do we make sure IoT is a core focus of what they're looking for and managing for us?
It's all about getting the visibility. What we've seen, at least in the past 12 to 18 months, is this rise in IoT attacks. If you cast your mind back to 2016, I think everyone can recall the Mirai botnet that was targeting DVRs, cameras, baby monitors, routers, medical devices, environmental monitoring, home appliances, and so forth. All of these things can be attached to either the home network or even the office network. But if you don't have that visibility, how would you know that it needs to be patched? And if it's not patched, that provides great stomping ground for an adversary to target. We look at this from two perspectives, secure by design and cyber resiliency. Firstly, making sure that you understand what your attack surface looks like, building in security rather than bolting on at the last minute. So if you have that secure foundation by making sure that the network architecture has been securely designed, you're rolling out a secure config, you're securing the data and understand what type of data is flowing through those systems. You're segmenting the network and you understand what devices are attaching themselves to your network. And then figuring out from an infrastructure and data center point of view, do you have the right infrastructure there built into the fabric? Has it been patched? Do you have visibility of the assets? Do you have visibility into the data that is crossing the network? And that's where we can talk about threat monitoring, but also making sure that you're conducting sufficient application security testing and various other types of penetration testing to understand what does that network look from an attacker's perspective so that you can build in the right security controls.
You mentioned cyber resiliency. It's a term that's come to the fore in the last 18 months. But for a lot of people, they're not really quite sure what it is.
In this year's report, the key theme was around cyber resiliency and security by design. Given that the digital landscape is continuously changing, especially given the current COVID-19 pandemic, businesses are being disrupted. Cyber resilience is all about businesses having to prepare, prevent, respond, and recover to a secure state without disrupting normal delivery. If there is an attack, you need to be able to absorb and recover from an adverse event. Now, it could be a security breach, it could be COVID-19 situation, it could be some other black swan event. What we're recommending in the report is that businesses have to strive to be both secure by design and cyber resilient. From an operational standpoint, if you are shifting to a decentralized way of working, you need to ensure that you're still delivering a product or service to a customer without being impacted by that event, be that a security breach or be it this the current situation that we're in.
How many people are rolling their incident response planning into their cyber resiliency planning? Because if we think about this, they really are just slightly different facets of the same issue.
Correct. We've done surveys on this in previous years. What we've shown is that 1 in 3 organizations do have an incident response plan. That leaves 2/3 who don't. Those types of organizations are the ones who are going to be predominantly impacted by COVID-19 and potentially other events as well. Even if there is a documented response plan, it tends not to have been tested or it's well out of date. That's where we're really discussing the need to have business continuity management, disaster recovery plans, testing out through either simulation or various tooling these days that allows one to understand how the security controls are functioning off the back of different types of events. But ultimately, it's about understanding what assets are important to the business and making sure that you're layering controls around that so you can continue to deliver outcomes to your clients.
In many of our business continuity, disaster recovery, cyber resiliency, incident response plans, we have named people who are woken up, they're key parts of the organization, they have roles and tasks that they will enact. The problem is organizations are fluid. People change jobs, people leave, new people come in. But often these plans are not maintained accurately. If we bring HR into that planning process, they're ideally positioned to know when these things change. How often are you seeing organizations realize HR has to be a key part of all of these plans?
There needs to be leadership from all parts of the equation when it comes to business continuity planning and incident response planning. Too often we see when we conduct our engagements that HR hasn't had a voice into the security policies. As a result, people come into the organization, they're onboarded, they're using different assets, and then they're offboarded and their data is still around or they haven't updated different documentation sets. HR needs to be able to raise that directly with the security leadership team within the organization to ensure that the appropriate provisioning and decommissioning of assets and updating of policies and regulations is put into effect. How often do we see that actually occurring? Not enough, unfortunately, but that's all a part of cybersecurity education, making sure everyone is aware of their responsibilities and how that can go to benefit or uplift the security posture of an organization.
A lot of organizations are regulated. They're struggling under the amount of compliance legislation. But one of the key parts of that is if you're a big organization, many regulators require you to test and prove your disaster recovery planning. Do you see regulators now starting to include cyber resiliency as part of that requirement?
There's definitely more simulation testing and discussions on cybersecurity assurance, particularly when it comes to cybersecurity insurance, where regulators are looking to test the effectiveness of the policies and the processes and the controls within organizations. I definitely see that as an uptick. It's certainly not a foolproof method to say that you have insurance and therefore are immune from threats and will be able to recover. And that's really why you need to be working either with a trusted partner or have your own adequately equipped team in-house to regularly test out your people, your processes and technology to ensure that you can successfully recover from an adverse event.
It's very easy to look at large reports and think the sky's falling in, particularly when they're as detailed as this and they show so many issues that people need to look at, especially if you're a multinational organization. If you were talking to a room full of CISOs, what would you give them as the top four takeaways that they can focus on that will substantially improve their security compared to what you've seen in the report?
Just taking a step back, whilst we always talk about how the threat landscape is changing, there are some positive recommendations and certainly positive commentary when it comes to specific sectors. For example, finance, business professional services, and healthcare sectors. Over the past 12 to 18 months, what we've seen is a general security uplift in their maturity. They are taking the correct steps in order to improve their posture and better withstand attacks, although no one is immune. In terms of what we recommend in the report, firstly, it's asset visibility or asset management, knowing what assets that you need to protect in order to secure that foundation. Secondly, how do you secure it? We talk about the need to patch or having a vulnerability management program in place because we know this is what adversaries are targeting year upon year. If you can reduce your exposure to vulnerabilities, that is automatically going to dramatically improve your security posture. Thirdly, ensuring that you have the right endpoint protections in place, because as we've seen through this report, we're calling out a lot of threats to the endpoint and threats to data. Ensuring that you have protection to adequately withstand different types of malware, be it ransomware attacks, be it different types of scanning technology that adversaries are employing, that will also lend increasing resilience against these types of attacks. Fourth, always invest in the right security controls, understanding what your current security posture is versus where you need to be. What does your risk profile look for in your individual organization? And then being able to map out these different security programs need to be put into effect. Maybe, for example, better education of the workforce so that they don't click on a malicious link in an email or some type of attachment that would impact the organization. Understanding where you need to go from where you are to drive that transformation journey is something that all organizations should invest in so that you can make the right technology decisions to move your security posture forward.
Mark, thank you for talking with us this morning. Sounds like life's going to be interesting.
Non-stop at the moment.